Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. We have everything you need to update your window treatments with Window Images blinds and shades. We carry vinyl, aluminum, and faux wood blinds, cellular shades, and more. Plus, get them trimmed to width in-store for free. Also, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. The legend of the Melonheads in Michigan is a type of urban legend or folklore that has circulated in various forms in different parts of the United States, including Ohio and Connecticut. The story typically involves small, human-like creatures with large heads resembling melons. These creatures are said to inhabit wooded areas and abandoned buildings, and various origin stories exist to explain their existence. In the context of Michigan, the Melonheads legend often centers around a group of children who were the subjects of scientific experiments gone wrong. During the course of my continued research on feral people in the USA's national parks, they have become one of my stranger discoveries. We're going to do a deep dive into the weird world of these Michigan mysteries and look at several spooky stories and theories about what they are, where they've come from, and if they're still watching us from the woods today. I'm your ghost, John. This is the 21CD Podcast. Let's get into it. Hey guys, welcome back to the 21CD Podcast. As always, I'm your ghost, John. If this is your first time here, hello! Remember to like, follow, and share. Find that one weird friend that you think would be interested in this kind of content and get them to indulge in the 21CD Podcast. We need all the help we can get. We're trying to defeat the algorithm. YouTube took down one of my videos yesterday. That sucks, so I was not prepared to do a whole nother full-length episode, but I aim to please, so here we are. The least you could do is like, follow, and share. That would be fantastic. I do have an Instagram. That's where most of the updates are, 21CD Podcast. That's where you can find it. I have a YouTube, which some of you guys are watching right now. If you're not on the YouTube and you're not on the Instagram, you're probably on a podcast somewhere. And as always, I just want to remind you podcast listeners that you can find me in 4K on the YouTube. Recently, we are beginning to use Rumble. So if you head over to Rumble, you will find me there as well. And since that is still a bastion of free speech, I am able to say whatever I want over there. And the video that was taken down from YouTube yesterday is up on Rumble. I'm not going to say what it's about, but it involves a certain triangular piece of food that we all know and love. And if you guys want to see some stuff that is too dicey for the tube, you can head on over there. So, anyway, like I said, I didn't have a whole episode prepared for the situation that YouTube would take down my episode. And I'm not going to lie, having my free speech violated like that after a ton of work and research was pretty dang frustrating, but this is the world we live in now. So, I'm not watering anything down, but this is probably a topic that you guys did not expect me to follow up with. But it's a fun one because it's about feral people. And I know that we are all kind of into feral people on this podcast. Feral people are a really interesting part of our reality. Like, well, we think, maybe, they're potentially an interesting part of our reality, but it almost seems impossible that they're not out there. So today we have a topic in that vein, but it's a bit off the wall. Like I said, I was relatively unprepared. I scoured the internet for hours and I thought, you know, let's see if there's any weird incidents going on in Michigan, because whenever I'm wondering what to do an episode on next, I just start Googling Michigan, because the weirdest stuff happens in Michigan. We've been covering a couple missing 411 cases that were bizarre and occurred in Michigan, and both of those cases involved stalkers from the woods before the victims went missing. And you can find both of those missing 411 cases on the 21CD podcast. So check those out if you're interested. And as I was researching, lo and behold, Michigan does indeed have their own little subgenre of feral people. So that's what we're going to be talking about. The Michigan Melonheads. Okay, so right off the bat, before I get this episode ripping and roaring, I do want to say that these, entities, let's call them entities. These entities were called the Melonheads in a time when disease was not particularly well understood. So there are theories that the Melonheads originated as victims of hydrocephalus, which is where there is a large amount of liquid in the brain which causes the head to expand and grow to an insane size. And because of that being a very real disease, a very real thing that some people are afflicted with, the term melon heads is offensive to some. And I want to say right off the bat, I mean no offense whatsoever. This is not a video that is attempting to be derogatory towards such individuals. These entities, these people, if they are people, because that's another thing, we don't actually know if they are people. And when I was researching this, I saw a lot of people getting up in arms because they were called melon heads. But the fact of the matter is, we don't actually know if they're people. We don't know what they are. They could be feral people who are afflicted with hydrocephalus, or they could be something else. We don't exactly know. But these melon heads, as they're called, have also been called wobble heads, and they've also been called a couple other names, which we're going to go over during the course of this episode. But that's my one disclaimer that I'm going to put out here. I am not aiming to be offensive, but I am relaying the information as it has always been relayed. And that's where we're going to leave it. So let's get into it, guys. Melon heads are an alleged tribe of heavily deformed humans originating from North American legends. According to this author, the tales of them began to spread around the 70s, with their supposed sightings beginning in Holland, Michigan. In the context of them being feral people, these people with large heads are said to creep around in the Saugatuck State Park in Michigan and the surrounding area. The cause of their deformities can vary from telling to telling, but it is most often attributed to the heavy inbreeding between the descendants of the escaped patients of a certain asylum that may or may not have existed in the area of Holland, Michigan. And these patients are thought to have been afflicted with hydrocephalus. This is one origin story for these melon heads. And for those of you who are like, what the heck is hydrocephalus? It's a condition in which an accumulation of cerebrospinal fluid occurs within the brain. In older people, hydrocephalus is noted to not affect the physical appearance of those who suffer from the condition, but this is not the case when it comes to infants, probably because the bone is much softer. The condition is known to cause an increase in head size in children, and downward-facing eyes. It's due to the increase in head size that resulted in their name, the Melon Heads, and they are believed to be suffering from various other conditions aside from hydrocephalus, most noteworthy being dwarfism, with them often being described as being short enough to be confused for a child at a distance. We're going to get into it before we start hatching some theories here, but there used to be an asylum out near Lake Michigan, as one of the stories goes, because nobody really knows where they have come from. There are, like I said, multiple origin stories, and some of them are really crazy, and some of them are just terribly tragic. But according to this one idea, there used to be an asylum out near Lake Michigan, and this was back sometime in the 20s, the 1920s, the 1930s, maybe the 1940s. Nobody seems to really be exactly sure, because there's no record of the asylum actually existing. So people are kind of like, well, nobody really knows, because it doesn't seem like that asylum was real. But in the incident that it was real and has been lost, the asylum was close to a very famous mansion called Felt Mansion. And it was built by the American inventor Dorr Felt. Okay. It said that at this asylum, there was a doctor who was doing experiments with radiation in an attempt to create a sort of race of mutants. Nobody knows if this is what he intended, but eventually the experiments resulted in the patients sort of having abnormally large heads. So this is sort of a situation where hydrocephalus isn't really the situation. This is more of them being created this way through experimentation. This might have remained a secret if not for the fact that after a mysterious fire at the asylum one night, supposedly the doctor died in the blaze, the patients actually escaped the asylum and fled into the forest, where their descendants still live today. And there are often sightings of the Melon Heads in the woods near Felt Mansion. A certain person, KT, from Grand Rapids Urban Legends, wrote of an experience she had, saying, "When I was younger, some of my cousins spent a night out there in a tent, hoping to see a Melon Head. They never saw anything, didn't hear anything either, but in the morning, when they were walking back to their car, they stumbled onto what looked like a homemade shelter in the woods. Something, or someone, had been living out there. When they brought me and some other people out the next weekend, though, the shelter was gone." And there's all sorts of stories like this from this part of Michigan, where it seems like things are being seen. Nobody really knows what they are, because they're like humans, but not, because of the abnormally large heads and whatnot. And it's an interesting idea when it comes to feral people, because it's one of the ways that I consider to be very probable for the creation of feral tribes. Like, people as a group escaping because of one terrible situation that is happening, and then just staying out there in the woods, having kids and stuff, learning to just survive, many of them dying, but some of them not, inbreeding, until all of the sudden, now there is a small tribe of 15, 20, however many feral individuals living in a state park. Like, I really think this is one of the ways that you could reasonably say that feral people are introduced into state park. But I think a lot of people think of, like, this wild caveman sort of situation, these people that have always been in the parks since the dawn of time, and the government is sort of containing them there. I do think there could be some of that. Don't get me wrong. I do think there could be a situation like that, where there is a race of individuals, and I think some of them could be giants, some of them could be sort of you know, creatures that are half man, maybe half Elohim, these Nephilim, things like that. I think there is definitely a place for that. But I think there's also a place for these reasonably newly introduced feral tribes, if you want to call them that, in the parks. And they are there because of terrible situations that they've been subject to, and they escaped, and now they're just still out there with their descendants. You know, like, kind of a rant there, but like, I liked the story of these wobbleheads, these melonheads, because it seems realistic, you know? Another story tells of a hospital in the area that was treating hydrocephalic children long ago. The hospital was forced to close, and the children had nowhere to go. So they were just released into the wild woods of Holland, Michigan. Which, we've heard of that happening too. Like, that still happens to this day when people don't want certain people in their lives or children, like animals, they will sometimes just leave them in the woods. So if there was a hospital that was under maybe poorly managed or poorly financed and unable to continue treating these children, there's nothing really saying that those nurses and those doctors didn't just take them, you know, hand in hand out to the woods and leave them there. I really think that could be something that actually happens, and more horrible stories have occurred. There's another story that says they were actually prisoners of some sort, and this is one of the wilder stories that I came across, but after a little digging, and I found perhaps one of the craziest things maybe I've read about the idea of feral people in a while. Apparently, there was a prisoner of war camp for German prisoners in the Allegan Forest during World War II. So, in this area, in Michigan, in the Allegan Forest, during World War II, there was a prisoner of war camp where German soldiers were kept. And allegedly, they did medical experiments on them, and some of these German soldiers actually escaped into the woods, and the experiments caused swollen heads and disfigured faces in some situations. And it's said that the German soldiers who were afflicted by this experimentation would run through the forest screaming at night, and in theory, you could hear them for miles. Now, obviously, that's a horror story, but there is a prisoner of war camp there, and there's almost nothing left except the foundations of the prison camp. There's very little on what actually went down there. It feels fake to me. I don't know for sure, but it felt like it was a little too perfect. But they say that the German soldiers were so nice that they helped the people of Michigan with their farms while they were being kept prisoner there. I don't know about that. First of all, I don't know if that would be allowed. Like, I don't know if you're going to let Nazis work on farms in your own country, in Michigan, during World War II. I don't know if that's something that would even be allowed. So already it kind of feels like this situation where we're trying to be like, no, we didn't have concentration camps in the United States, even though maybe we had something going on. But so it's kind of hard to know what the real story of this POW camp is. But one interesting fact that I did read was that many of the prisoners actually, quote unquote, chose to stay after the war and take up residence in Michigan. Like I said, whether that's propaganda or not, I have no idea. They may, when I was reading about this camp, and I'm telling you, there were not many results, like maybe a total of 9 Google results on this camp. But when I was reading about it, they were all very like, oh yeah, it was more of like a boys' camp for Nazi prisoners. Like, it was really nice, and they ate really well, and the people adored them, and they helped on the farms. And it's kind of like, that doesn't feel right. Like, that doesn't seem like that's the way it actually was. But that is the picture that was painted. I actually have the coordinates for this camp, so I might go out there once I get settled after my move up north and see what it actually looks like. But supposedly there's not much left. So as you can see, it's kind of difficult to know where exactly the wobbleheads or the melonheads came from because, like I said before, records of an asylum have never been found in the region. And when it comes to the Nazi prisoner of war camp, the information also seems kind of skewed. But one thing that was there was a prison, like a certified prison. And aside from the POW camp, and it has since been torn down because after it stopped being used, it became sort of just this place for teenagers to do drugs, and so they tore the thing down. But it gets really interesting when you realize that there's a vast network of trails in the Lake Town Township, and some caves even. And surrounding the Felt Mansion in particular, and Saugatuck Dunes State Park. And they're said to be haunted by this mysterious band of creatures, not just the Melonheads, but including the Melonheads. And the Melonheads story, the legend, actually extends to all the way to Ohio and Connecticut. But in Ohio, there was this Dr. Crow, who was allegedly experimenting on individuals who looked strikingly similar to the Melonheads of Michigan. And he is a known doctor, this Dr. Crow, and obviously it's up in the air if he actually committed these atrocities, but his house was mysteriously burned down, which seems to line up with some of the origin stories of the Melonheads across from state to state. So one form of the legend says that he was a mad scientist, and he had these orphans that came to his property, and he was acting like he was taking care of them, like nurturing them and taking care of them and treating their ailments and stuff, but he was actually secretly doing procedures on them, and they began to develop swelling of their brains and deformities in their heads. He continued to inject their brains and skulls with liquids. At one time, the kids got so tired of being abused, which I thought was a funny way to say it, tired of being abused, but they rose up against Dr. Crow and his wife, and legend has it that they lit his house on fire and burned Dr. Crow to death in the house. Others say that they actually tore him to pieces during this incident and ate him, and still others say they tore him to pieces and hid his body parts all over the countryside. But they quickly realized that they didn't have a place to go after this, so they took to the woods, and they survived in the woods. And so that's the legend, and they are rumored to still be out there in Ohio and Connecticut. In particular, that Ohio is where this story is, but also in Michigan. There's another legend where the government was responsible for doing experiments on the children, which resulted in their large heads. You can see that most of these theories are not that they were actually afflicted with hydrocephalus. A lot of this may be actual torture or experimentation that is giving them this deformity of these large heads. But the kids were eventually sent to this place, and you hear these stories of older people saying, well, when I was a teenager in the 1950s, we would be out there and see glowing eyes in the woods, or we might see something else. And legend has it that the Melonheads live in an underground series of tunnels, sometimes jumping out to attack people or eat them. The stories say Melonheaded children lived originally at this insane asylum near Felt Mansion, like we've already said, but sort of escaped into these tunnels. That's an interesting theory because it makes you wonder about the grays a little bit. It makes you wonder if all of this idea about them being tortured into having these large heads isn't actually real. Is it possible that these are grays? Because the idea of the grays is that they are humans who had to escape underground and eventually evolved, I guess you could say, to have the large head and the skinny bodies and the big eyes. And it's bizarrely similar to what these melon heads are said to look like. So when you start talking about them living underground and them looking strikingly similar to the grays, I do think it gives rise to this possibility that they could be a race of grays living in Michigan, Ohio, and Connecticut. But as you can see, tales abound about the melon heads, specifically in Michigan. And one individual submitted this story to Mysterious Michigan. Last year, me and some of my friends at Hope College decided that we wanted to go to the Allegan County Woods in Hamilton in search of the melon heads. On our first night there, we went back on a path for about a mile and came to an opening where there seemed to be some sort of foundation of a building still there, but the building itself was gone. On the walk back to the opening, there was a sign hanging over the path, but it was too faded to really make out the wording. On the first night, we did not experience anything too out of the ordinary that we didn't think we couldn't explain by animals of some sort. We went back the next night, though. It was raining, mixed with some lightning. Me and two other guys were leading the group down the path, and about a half mile into our walk, there was a lightning flash, and all three of us saw the same exact figure of a human, maybe about 4.5 feet tall, with an abnormally large head standing in the middle of the clearing that we had gone to the night before. We three kind of slowed down for a minute, and the next thing we knew, we heard a large crash in the woods to the left of us. We immediately turned and ran back to the cars. So that's pretty creepy. These guys go out during a storm trying to find a campsite and end up, or I assume trying to find a campsite, maybe just trying to find a place to hang out, and they see one of these supposed melon heads in the woods in lightning flashes. And that's the way a lot of these stories of these melon heads are. It seems like they're seen, and they get, whoever's seeing them gets a really good look for a brief moment, and then something causes a distraction, and they turn they towards the distraction. Then when they look back, the creature is gone. Another story from the area I managed to find goes a little like this. This one popped up as one of the more random stories relating to the melon heads. So do with it what you will, but it was interesting enough that I wanted to put it in. So the guy goes, "This happened roughly 15 minutes ago, and I am confused as well as somewhat freaked out. I drove to a small settlement about 20 minutes outside the city to pick up a friend from her trailer. I was sitting in my vehicle in front of her home waiting for her to come to the vehicle. I had my brights on as the settlement sits mostly in the dark and the roads lead to it are very dark. The settlement only houses a few people, so I was not concerned about my headlights being a problem. While I was sitting there having a smoke, I saw some kind of shadow moving just on the edge of where my headlights were shining. At first I assumed it was a neighbor wandering in the snow, but soon I realized that this was not the case. I could tell that it had stopped as I could see it standing just outside the light. It was the size of a young child, maybe 8 or 9, and was wearing all black. After standing there for a minute or so, it began to limp away. That's the best way to describe it. It sort of waltzed awkwardly across the road and stopped again, this time illuminated by my headlights. It had very few noticeable features, but the thing that absolutely freaked me out was its lack of an arm. Where its right arm or shoulder should have been, there was nothing. It looked as though someone had cut from the end of its neck down to its waist. Half the torso was missing. It seemed to lean awkwardly on the missing side, giving it the illusion of hunching over. The legs were very thin and almost looked curved or warped. I know it wasn't turned at a weird angle, making it look that way, as it was facing my vehicle head on. I stared at it, trying to make sense of its body structure, and before I could get in my car, it waddled out of sight towards the train tracks in the field behind the trailers, where a train was currently passing by. My friend came out to the car and I told her what happened. Before I could finish, she asked me if it was missing an arm. I freaked out and said yes, somewhat glad I wasn't losing my mind. She said her son, who was about 7 years old, had been claiming to see the same thing at night. She figured he was just being difficult, as he is autistic. She was so scared by what I said that she decided to stay home and be with him. I have no idea what I saw, but whatever it was, I wasn't the only one seeing it. I'm going to attempt to draw it when I get home, and I'll post it here. Unfortunately, he never posted it. I think the thing that freaked me out the most was the fact that its breath wasn't frosted. It's very cold out here, and you can see your breath very easily. The thing to blow a single puff off frosted air. It was as though it wasn't breathing at all. It didn't even leave foot trails in the snow. I can honestly say I have no explanation for what I saw. I have never seen anything like it. It was seriously nightmare fuel. So, what are these things? Like, this is where it always gets tricky, because we believe in a lot of weird stuff on this channel, right? Like, we believe in Bigfoot, we believe in Dogman, we believe in Mothman. We believe that all of this stuff is real or has the potential to be something similar to what we perceive it as. Like, for instance, when it comes to Mothman, I have a whole episode on Mothman. Some people believe that it is actually half moth, half man creature. I personally believe it could be some kind of tech or something else. But, like, in the end, we all kind of believe in this stuff. When it comes to feral people, it's almost like, how do you really rationalize the fact that these could be human beings? And are they human beings? Or are they something else? In this story, we have, I mean, it could have easily been a human being, wounded, missing an arm. I'm sure out there in the woods, if you are a feral tribe, there is any number of traumatic injuries that you can experience, and you might actually survive them. I mean, I have seen animals walking through the woods half eaten because of bear attacks, and they're still out there somehow. And, you know, there's that one Skinwalker video where, like, the deer had fallen somehow and broken its neck, and it had healed, but its head was, like, on sideways. You know, situations like that occur, and without the assistance of modern medicine, yeah, you sort of look messed up after you heal from a traumatic injury like that. So in that story, it could be something like that. It could be something else as well. But I think the obvious first guess is that these could be sick people who had a very cruel and horrifying Genesis story, which ultimately drove them into the woods to survive any way that they could, and it became the only way that they know how. And as they intermingled and had children, those children sort of became the feral ones. I think that is how it probably happens when it comes to feral people. There's another idea, however, and this comes from Cree mythology, the Cree Indians, and it's very interesting. In the Cree legends, they sometimes talk about these entities called the Managishi, and they're described as pygmy, human-like entities that resemble little men with long, thin legs and arms. They're said to have 12 fingers, 6 on each hand, which is interesting because that ties into Nephilim. Their round, bulbous, hairless heads with large eyes and no nose are apparently quite big in comparison to their small bodies. So again, now we're talking about this creature that looks like these wobble heads, these melon heads, and it also kind of looks like the Greys a little bit. Six fingers on each hand is very indicative of Nephilim. According to the Cree Indians, the Managishi are responsible for the pictographs found on rocks in the area, and their dwelling places are among the rocks near rapids. It is said that they are great tricksters and apparently enjoy playing pranks and jokes on humans. And though the Cree maybe are most famous for their connection to Canada, they were also known to inhabit Michigan and Ohio. So it's yet another like arrow pointing at the fact that we don't necessarily have to go to weird experimentation. There may have been something here already, and horror stories were invented to sort of explain what these things are in the woods. But at the same time, where did those stories come from in the first place? Was it just teenagers in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and whatnot making up stories? Were they actually seeing things? Because there's stories to this day of things being seen that look like these melon-headed creatures. So it must still be going on. Unless just everybody's lying, which is just a world I try to believe I don't exist in. But another surprisingly obvious and mundane idea is this concept that there may be a tribe of Greys that do live in this area, that live in Ohio and Michigan, parts of Canada and Connecticut. Like, there are so many contact stories with Greys that to me it wouldn't be surprising at all if they were living out here in the forests in some way, in some capacity. And since they are said to come from the underground, why is it so off the wall to assume that maybe they are living underground in these areas? And maybe the horror stories of experimentation and Nazi prisoners and stuff, that's just all fuel to the fire. But in reality, there may be some Greys living in these areas. Nearby, also in Allegan County region of Michigan, is another story. And I'm just going to read this article by Ricardo. He writes for Within the Trenches because, I mean, this article is just dang good. But I found it very interesting in relation to the location that the melon heads are said to roam. So let's get straight into it. I spoke of the melon or wobble heads of West Michigan. They have been said to live in the woods of Laketown Township by the Felt Mansion. It's a story that has spread across the area, but another story amazes me for its connection to the ruthless gangster Al Capone. Growing up, I heard of the Yellow Motel within the Pullman area of Allegan County. And apparently this Yellow Motel area is crazy. It was said to be haunted by the murder victims of Al Capone. The gangster and his men would frequent the Yellow Motel back when he was in power. There were underground tunnels, as well as a pit of quicksand where his victims were left to be swallowed by the land. Years later, the stories of a ghostly car that crashes in the area, as well as white dogs guarding the area, continue to be a topic of interest. I've driven down the back roads of Allegan County, but I've never witnessed anything personally. I suppose it's because it was never at night. Well, I have been there at night, but I was in a different area. So how true is this story involving this motel and Al Capone? According to Charlotte Wyke, who wrote on the topic for Advanced Newspapers, witnesses claim to have observed an unearthly yellow glow around the ruins of a former resort in the Allegan Forest, and others report being chased by white dogs near the ruins. And I was finding so many stories of this to back up these claims. Others report a blue motel that transforms to a sickly yellow. The story of white dogs is one that I have heard before, Back when I was in high school, a cousin of mine told me that he and some other friends drove out to where the Yellow Motel was located. He said that they pulled up, left the lights on to the car, and began walking towards the motel. He said that the lights turned off and all they could see were red eyes. He said that they ran back to the car, and when they turned the lights on, a white dog jumped on the hood of the vehicle. He said that it took a minute for the car to turn on, but once it did, they took off and the dog disappeared. There are more stories that relate to the Yellow Motel other than the one of Al Capone. Tanya Howe, a Yahoo Network contributor, also wrote about the Yellow Motel. She says, "Ken, a friend of mine, was renting it when my husband and I drove by for a visit. However, Ken was not home. So as we drove around the circle driveway, a lady looked out the window at us. When I later told Ken about this, he told me that he lives there alone, but that the lady watches him when he is mowing the lawn as well. I can't imagine seeing this, let alone living within the motel when it once stood. The stories are almost unbelievable, but if it was haunted, where did it all start?" Howe states that it is said a young couple honeymooning there caused the hauntings to begin when the groom, discovering his bride not to be a virgin, killed her and threw himself out the window. It would be something else to find out the truth behind the Yellow Motel, but I think it's the mystery that keeps the story going. The motel burned down in the late 90s, and some say it was vandalized, but others think it was the ghost that haunted the motel. "I stopped to talk to the renters who were going through the rubble," said Howe, "and they indicated that they felt the fire was set by the ghosts and that it was not their first attempt to set the place ablaze." It's interesting, like, all the fires is a common theme. Among all of these legends, the fires is the common theme. Always a fire burning down a building that kicks all this off. So what really happened at the Yellow Motel, we might never know. But is it the same thing that sort of happened at the Felt Mansion and maybe this Dunes Correctional Facility in the area? Is that what was referred to as the Junction Asylum, where the Melonheads got their origin, one of their potential origins? I kind of reached the end of the research that I could do on these topics, but it's definitely worth looking into because it feels very much like an unfinished story. Like, when I'm reading this stuff, it doesn't feel like anybody has any real answers. Everybody's kind of like, yep, there's something out in the woods. Don't know what it is, but there's like three or four different ideas that we have that it could be. And also, this whole area has a history of hauntings. Al Capone was here burying bodies. And the white dogs are very interesting. So there's all sorts of stuff going on in this area. So I know all of this probably feels pretty random. Like, why are we talking about these weird little melon-headed creatures in Michigan? Of all things that I could have chosen to talk about, like, I don't even have an episode on Dogman or aliens even, or Bigfoot. Like, I haven't hit a lot of these major players that most people talk about on their paranormal podcasts. But I'm really into, you know, like, for those of you who don't know, I'm moving up north. That's where I'm from, and I'm moving back in a few weeks. So I'm really looking at the area in a different light because the last time I lived there, I didn't have 21 CD. So now I've got 21 CD, and I'm bringing it to this new world. And I've started researching these missing 411 cases in Michigan and realizing that there is stuff going on in Michigan that revolves around creatures watching people from the woods, those people being able to tell somebody, and then those people dying, those people going missing and being found dead. And it's I have two episodes on the podcast, the Scared to Death, which is the case of Cullen Finnerty, and then I have the Adrian Quintel gunfight with the supernatural episode as well. You guys can check those out if you want. It's episode 20 and episode 22 of the 21 CD podcast. But in both of those episodes, they say they are able to get phone calls out to people saying, I am being watched. There is somebody outside my window. And in both instances, there's two of them. There are two things watching me. They never say they're human. They never say they're men or women. They don't seem to know what they are, but they're humanoid-ish, they say. They follow them. They stalk them. They watch them. They try to get in their cabin or get in their boat or something like that. And then the victims, like in this case, Cullen Finnerty and Adrian Quintal, they're found dead. Two separate occasions in Michigan, an hour apart from each other. And both of these places are near expanses of wilderness, where you would expect to find feral people or humanoid creatures living in the woods, potentially Nephilim, descendants of Elohim, Elohim splicings, creatures you can't really explain with humanoid qualities. This is where people see those things. And in the case of these Cree legends about the, what were they called? I'm going through my notes real quick, see if I can find this. The Managishi. The Cree would say that the Managishi would actually attempt to pull them out of their canoes and flip over their boats. And in the case of Cullen Finnerty, he was actually in a boat and he felt safer getting on land, which is interesting. In the case of Adrian Quintal, she said that these things were attempting to take her. They were attempting to break into the house that she was in, the little cabin that she was in. And she actually ended up engaging in a gunfight, but them trying to take her is very indicative of some of the behavior that has been reported by these melonhead creatures, which are said to be cannibalistic and will actually attack people. So it's difficult to say exactly what any of this is. Michigan is a strange, strange place. Things go missing that shouldn't go missing in Michigan. People vanish without a trace in Michigan. And I'm not exactly sure how to explain any of it, but I think it's fascinating to merge these two worlds of missing 411 and potentially feral people or strange humanoid creatures in the wilderness of Michigan specifically. And we could say this about anywhere, though, right? Like, we could say this about the Smokies, the Appalachians. Like, we could say this about literally anywhere, any national park. But I'm trying to narrow it down so that we can maybe set our sights on something here. These two things, these missing 411 cases and these melon-headed people in Michigan, there may be some kind of correlation. At a minimum, these melon-headed people might not be as melon-headed as they once were. Their descendants might not look like they did originally, especially if their descendants weren't experimented on like the ancestors were from the 20s, 30s, and 40s. A lot of those stories were saying that they were manipulated, they were experimented on, and that's why they had the deformities that they had. But it's reasonable to say that their descendants wouldn't have those same deformities because their descendants weren't experimented on. So if there was a small tribe of individuals who were experimented on somewhere in Michigan's past, and they fled into the woods and intermingled and interbred and had offspring, those offspring probably are just feral people. They're probably not these deformed beings that you could barely like identify. And they might be responsible for some of the missing 411 cases in Michigan. Something to think about. There's some cases where children are taken from places in Michigan, like little children, and they are found miles and miles away in the wilderness still, but miles and miles away, and they disappear so quickly and are found relatively quickly, too, in such a way that it would be impossible for those children to be brought where they were brought. Unless, perhaps, You were a feral person, grown up in these woods, knew how to navigate quickly, knew how to cross the landscape rapidly. It's something to think about. We don't know everything that's going on. So I know that these melon-headed entities, it probably does sound a little bit bizarre, but I think that the story is actually more grotesque and unfortunate than we realize, and that this ugliness could have easily given birth to a tribe that lives in the woods of Michigan. This is one of the most profound stories where you feel like you get an actual genesis, like an actual origin for a tribe, a group of feral people that could be in the woods of Michigan and could be responsible for killing people, and, you know, kidnapping people and children and causing them to generally go missing in absolutely unexplainable ways. So, something to think about. Listen, guys, I had a great time with you guys. I know that this episode was a little off the cuff. Like I said, I really had to do this in a matter of hours because I woke up this morning and saw that my other episode had been taken off of YouTube. So I really wasn't planning on doing a whole nother episode, but I appreciate all that you guys do, and I don't want to leave you hanging ever. Please remember to like, follow, share, and subscribe, and get your friends in on the 21 CD podcast. We've got to reach more people, especially now if they're trying to shadow ban me or whatever else. We've got to keep this party going. I really can't thank you guys enough for the amount of support that you showed the 21 CD podcast today, in light of everything that's been going on. So thank you guys. Shout out to y'all. Remember, don't drink the water and question everything. Later.